up, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Ramel Kyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters here in Austin, Texas, on the Horn. Away we go today, Chelsea. Big winners today. Pick up a full 3 points. Tammy Abraham with a pair, 3-0 over West Ham. Alex Morgan on her way back from Spurs to the United States to play in the NWSL in the upcoming season. Kyle Beckerman, the U.S. star, also starred RSL, 14 years there, 21 seasons in Major League Soccer. He has retired. Club America fired Miguel Herrera after the not the best of sportsmanship in the CONCACAF Champions League. Honestly, I get people's passion around Miguel Herrera, but I would say now it's a fine line between passion and a real problem. The guy needs help. Over 40 times has been sent off as a player and a coach. Yeah, the media loves the guy because it's a train wreck ready to happen. It happened in the match against LAFC, and to be honest with you, I'm glad that Club America made the statement. They needed to make it. They made it quick, but there is that fine line, and Herrera's behavior in that game very much mirrored Club America's behavior and lack of emotional control, and that likely cost them a game that they had a man advantage going into the second half. Still stunned that VAR is not used in CONCACAF simply for this reason, because players know when it's not being used that they are going to push the envelope. And that's exactly what Memo Ochoa did in getting Atuesta sent off. And as far as we know, Atuesta is not going to be available. Such a big piece for LAFC against Tigres. And that is tomorrow night in the CONCACAF Champions League final. The winner of that game will go to Qatar in the World Club Championship. Now, we all know how many people in Major League Soccer have wanted MLS to get to this event, to have the opportunity to play a Liverpool, a Barcelona, or a Real Madrid. That's what could happen. LAFC's at the final hurdle against Tigres. It would be a 4th straight win against a Mexican League team if they can pull this off. Tigres is the best team they will play, clearly from a talent perspective. And without Atuesta in midfield for them, it's a tough one. Now, we also know Javier Aquino and Gignac are both, right now, according to Tuca Ferretti, their coach, a little bit up in the air. Now, Tuca Ferretti needs a CCL. He wants it. They haven't gotten there. They've been to the final 3 times. They've never won. And if we remember, in Major League Soccer in 2011, RSL was at the pinnacle. Montreal was at the pinnacle in 2015. And then Toronto FC in 2018. And you remember Toronto FC actually prioritized in a very big way CONCACAF Champions League over the Major League Soccer schedule and lost in the final. And then they had a really rough year in MLS. It was interesting. So those are a couple of news and notes. We all know that Manchester United had a very, very big win this weekend. Scott McTominay scoring twice very early against Leeds. That great rivalry renewed. And from the old days, ever since Leeds dropped out of the Premier League, had huge financial problems. But that was a club with monster names in history. Guys like Peter Lorimer, Jackie Charlton, Johnny Giles, Gordon McQueen, big, big names. And that rivalry with Manchester United is a big one because of their proximity to each other. But at the end of the day, Manchester United absolutely destroyed Marcelo Bielsa's squad. And they did it in a big, big way. I mean, they had 4 goals in the first half. So pretty big beatdown. Show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. And we were hoping to get this very special guest on, and this came off very quickly. We have John Thorington, the general manager of LAFC, and he joins us now from Florida. John, thank you so much for coming on short notice.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty lucky to get a guy like you on at the click of a finger here. So I guess the first thing is how important is this for LAFC tomorrow? How important is this for Major League Soccer to get over the hurdle here in this final game?
Yeah, Glenn, look, it's massive for us as a club, for us as a league, as the representative, the last representative of MLS to be in a big final against a big club. It's a great achievement thus far, but it's not quite enough just yet. We still want to go out, perform like we have done in these last couple games, and bring home a trophy to MLS and certainly to LA. So it would be difficult for me to overstate the importance of this game and the value we put on it as a club.
When I see guys like you thrive, guys that have had excellent playing careers, but then take very seriously, you know, a different level of the game. You're a talent assessor. You're a guy that's piecing things together. You went and got an advanced degree. All of this stuff is really, really impressive to me. And I got to think you picked up lessons along the way in very differing ways, even all the way back to your time as a youth player at Manchester United.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I appreciate your overly flattering words there. And yeah, certainly it's true. I think we're all products of our experiences and backgrounds and what have you. And I was fortunate enough through playing days and since playing to play for, play alongside some great players, some great coaches, some great managers. And I'm doing my best to pick up those lessons. And, you know, ultimately we all have to be ourselves and be genuine to who we are, but certainly was blessed to have had the opportunity to learn from coaching greats and be alongside some great players and great friends that I tried to pick up some pieces along the way and do my best to represent this club well and do so to the best of my ability.
John Thorington joining us, general manager of LAFC. Going into this tomorrow, you just come from training. Maybe you can give us a little bit of the mood around the players and everything. It's a very quick turnaround. It's a very quick tournament. Maybe you can take us into that maybe a little bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we had a disappointing end to the season once our season was cut short for our standards in Seattle a number of weeks ago. And what I have been so impressed with is I, to be candid, was not sure what type of response we would get from the players, from the staff, looking ahead to what obviously are these important games and knowing the task in front of us of playing Cruz Azul at that time and taking it a step at a time. But what was very clear from day one, once these players got back on the field and trained and the staff and everybody came together in a really strong way, and you could see the focus and the determination that we were not going to go through the motions in training and that guys were taking this as seriously as they should, which that's often difficult when you're dealing with the emotions of a really tough year, a disappointing end of the season. But we've managed to channel all that in a positive way. The guys have come together. As I say, the staff have done just a fantastic job of getting the guys, putting them in the right spots to be successful, and the players have done the rest. And as I say, it's been two great performances thus far. It's an incredible achievement to beat two great teams in Cruz Azul and Club America, but our objective has not yet been met, and that is what I hope we will be celebrating tomorrow night.
John Thorington, head of soccer operations, general manager of LAFC, who's had just this amazing run here in the CONCACAF Champions League, knocking off León, Cruz Azul, Club America. All three of these were comebacks. When you look at, and everybody looks at some of the signings you made, I mean, obviously you brought in Bob Bradley, masterstroke. You brought in Carlos Vela. These are things you only have one time to get correct, especially when you're an expansion team. I mean, you hit these out of the park. How much pressure did you feel making these moves and these hires, John?
Yeah, certainly there is pressure and pressure that you welcome because it means these are meaningful decisions, and I certainly embrace that. And I think you raised a few of them, the key decisions that we did get right as a club. And all I can say is That's one thing that I will consistently be bold enough to brag about, is that I do think we hired well. And I think Bob, his staff, everything from Bob and the coaching staff to the equipment staff, the performance staff, the medical staff, our scouts, it's a very collaborative process. So I want to be clear not to take too much credit for these hires, these decisions, and the success that we have had to date. And as I say, I don't want to get carried away with success yet. We're still one step away from our ultimate objective here. But yeah, you know, you do get certain decisions that you have to make right that sets the trajectory of the organization. And owners knew that, I knew that, and we spent a lot of time and diligence in seeking out the right people and the right players to lay this foundation. And we do feel like we've gotten more right than wrong, and it's not been perfect. It's been up, it's been down. This year has certainly been one of some travails that we you know, 2020 is not what we planned for, and therefore I guess it's somewhat logical did not go quite according to plan. But you know, here we are, one step away from a big title, and one that we set out as a club from day one to say we want to be a club that makes some noise in the global game, and we have a great opportunity to do so tomorrow night.
Well, Major League Soccer, everybody's behind you. We'll all be tuning in tomorrow night, John. John, thank you so much for jumping on. This is a nice, special little interview we got here with you from Florida. And again, best of luck against Tigres tomorrow night. And again, thank you for coming on.
Of course, Glenn. And I will just say we feel that support of the league, the number of messages I've received from other clubs wishing us well. And then certainly it's a shame that we are doing this without our supporters in LA, but certainly want everybody to know that we feel that support and we greatly appreciate it and are confident it'll spur us on to victory tomorrow night.
Thank you, John. Best of luck tomorrow.
Okay, Glenn.
All right, that's John Thornton, soccer operations head of LAFC. Also, a long playing career, 17 years, played in England, Germany, Major League Soccer, Chicago Fire, born in Johannesburg, South Africa. Tomorrow, it is a big night for Major League Soccer. LAFC against Tigres. We're going to talk more about it. Coming up next, another special guest. John Arnold will join us to talk CONCACAF. He'll talk this match tomorrow night. Again, our show brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Bilingual. John Daspit. DaspitLawAustin.com. Personal injury attorneys that work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. You get in an accident, it's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com. John Arnold coming up next. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Big news today for Austin FC. Hector Jimenez, now 32 years of age, signed by the club. Very versatile winger, outside back. He's getting a lot of playing time at outside back until Milton Valenzuela was brought in 2018, a young designated player in Columbus. Took some of his playing time away, but Josh Wolf, the head coach of Austin FC, knows him well from his time in Columbus, so you'll get a veteran, a good locker room guy, guy that can guide young players and is versatile. Minute-wise, his last biggest minute year was 2019, played over 1,600 minutes. So the 13th player signed by Austin FC. We move back to LAFC and Tigres in the CONCACAF Champions League final, and John Arnold, who is an expert on the CONCACAF region of the world, joins us now. John, how are you?
I'm good. Excited to talking about this tournament that we didn't know if they were going to get finished or not. It's kind of culminating in a very exciting way, so I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, tomorrow night's going to be incredible, John. Just put it in perspective. We just had on John Thorington, the general manager of LAFC. Just put it into perspective what this can mean to our league, because, you know, we all kind of come together when an MLS team gets to a final of the CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah, I've said for a long time, and I'll continue saying it, that MLS to be competitive with Liga MX and to be the best league in the region, which is a goal that it set for itself, and I think a good goal, it needs to win this tournament, the CONCACAF Champions League, our most important club competition, not just once. It needs to win it consistently. But to win it consistently, you do have to win it once, right? You have to start somewhere, and I think that this is a good opportunity to do that. You have a team like LAFC that really does kind of carry the flag of what MLS wants to be about in the modern era. You have this team that kind of came together quickly, but yet has really resonated with this community off the field. And on the field, plays a beautiful style of soccer with recognizable star names. And it's just a lot of fun to watch. You know, I think some of their deficiencies are at the back. And that makes for better enjoyment, better viewing experience, because they're giving up a lot of goals sometimes, but they're also scoring a lot, and it's a lot of fun. So I think, you know, this is an important step for MLS. Even if LAFC loses, it's still good that the teams are competing as well as they are, that LAFC beat three Mexican teams on the way to this point. But obviously, if an MLS team could finally lift this trophy, I think that sort of rivalry only grows, and MLS's stature only grows. And again, I think it's about consistency, but you got to do it once to do it consistently. So maybe it starts tomorrow.
Well, and I think in order to get the full benefit out of beating teams like León, Cruz Azul, and Club America, all three in comebacks, we remind people, which is pretty amazing, with 10 men in the last game. I mean, to get full value out of that, you gotta seal the deal. You gotta get to Qatar. You gotta get a game against Liverpool or, a big name club team on a big stage. To your point on the defensive side of things, is this kind of a testament to LAFC that they go out and get Jesus Murillo and solidify things at the back? Because I think we all could see from the outside they had some real struggles in central defense.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that, then the fact that they've had to come from behind, I mean, yeah, this is, you're talking about a team that's gutsy. You're talking about a team that is, able to cope with things that when things go wrong, right? You know, last game in that semifinal, if people watched it, if not, you missed out. But, things really went wrong for LAFC. They were down a goal early, which is not good against an América team that really had struggled to put together much in the attack in the last month and a half because of injuries and various absences. And then they went down to 10 men on a sort of farcical red card that Guillermo Ochoa, the América goalkeeper, was able to draw. So things didn't look good, but they didn't let it stop them. They didn't complain about the refereeing. Well, they did do that a little bit, but, it didn't affect their game, right? They kept playing in the same way, even down a man. Carlos Vela took his star turn, scores two goals, and they're through, right? So I think all of that is a testament to this club and what they can do. And sort of, eventually you do have to paper over those deficiencies, right? So eventually you got to do something. So, it'll be tested again. Andre Pierre-Gignac is apparently carrying a knock. He missed training today for Tigres. Hopefully he can play just for the spirit of competition and the kind of personality that he brings and the sort of orbit, I guess, that he has around him is just this big star and a huge personality. I think it'd be fun to watch, Vela versus Tigres back line and Gignac versus LAFC's back line. But, Glenn, to your question, I think, when you can do something, you kind of have to do it. So absolutely credit to LAFC for kind of recognizing some of their weaknesses and getting past them in a lot of ways.
One of my favorite writers, John Arnold. It's at Arnold, John, J-O-N. Why does CONCACAF not use VAR? Because, look, as a former professional soccer player, I know the minute VAR is not there. All these players know it. Their coaches know it. They talk about it. And there are things you can do without the knowledge of VAR being instituted in this game, a la Memo Ochoa, who got out to West to sent off, which it's just farcical. By the way, spirit of competition. I'm not sure Memo gets big points on that, although I do love him as a goalkeeper. But why no VAR in CONCACAF?
Yeah, the thing is that it will be there eventually. CONCACAF.
No, but why is it not there now? Because it hurt the tournament the other night.
No, you're right. You're right. Here's why it's not there now.
I don't care what happens in the future. They already blew it in this tournament. And I'm going to say the only thing, John, I can come up with, and I know CONCACAF a lot better than me when it comes to some of the details of these things. All I can come up with is cost and finances.
The referees with CONCACAF obviously come from corporate. You know, in this region, we have sort of three sub-regions. We have the North America, the Central America, and the Caribbean. The FIFA referees that are coming out of the Central American and Caribbean region, most of them haven't used VAR. Most of them haven't used them. So that's what CONCACAF will tell you, is that we wanted to take the time to implement this and make sure that our referees actually understand what's happening. They don't want a scenario in which you have a Costa Rican referee like you did, who doesn't necessarily use VAR or in the domestic game, and then all of a sudden he says, "Oh, I don't know what's going on." Now, I talked to referees last year at the Gold Cup, and I said, "Does that kind of carry water? Is that how you feel personally?" And they kind of said, "You know what? We just want it to be consistent, because I'm having to remember, do I have this technology? Do I need to be listening to someone in my ear? You know, so I think the sooner the better." And I understand, you know, why fans and, you know, can be upset that there wasn't maybe VAR added to this tournament when it became clear it was going to be at one site. But at the same time, that is consistently what CONCACAF has said. Hey, we're going to add this in the future. We want to make sure referees are trained up, and, you know, take it or don't. But I think that's what CONCACAF will stick with as their sort of answer for why they haven't utilized technology that really everyone else in the world is using.
Yeah, I would just say they got to accelerate the process, because any player that knows it's not there is thinking of ways to bend and push the rules to the limit. It's just natural. Eduard Atuesta, and I know we've heard that it's not likely this is going to get overturned. Is that still what you're hearing as well, John?
Yeah, basically, CONCACAF's ruling was essentially, hey, there's actually no appeal process. Kind of any decision that happens on the field is final. That's how the tournament regulations are written up. I will say, I think it's a shame. I think it's a shame we missed the final for sure. But I do understand CONCACAF saying these are the tournament regulations. We're going to abide by them and not change them mid-tournament or change them to make it possible for a player to play in the final. You know, if you're a Tigres, you'd be pretty frustrated if all of a sudden a guy that you're not game planning for pops up available. I do get it, right? But I do think it's certainly a time to take a look at some of those tournament regulations. And look, the increased scrutiny is only going to make the competition better. People like us in the press and fans who are tweeting and writing in and everything, saying, why is there no VAR at this tournament? Why can Atuesta's, you know, red card not be reviewed and rescinded? I think the pressure only makes things better, and I think we should expect that to change in the future. It certainly seems like it's time for a long look at the tournament regulations.
John, what about this crazy dance with Miguel Herrera? I mean, obviously, this was sportsmanship at its worst. How is the guy allowed to stay in the stadium and not be told by CONCACAF that you have been sent off? That means you can't stay in the stadium. And then the guy sits in the crowd with a walkie-talkie. And honestly, they're not doing themselves any favor by not sticking to the rules.
No, absolutely. I mean, I do wonder if it was simply kind of not wanting to, like, make a scene and physically remove a guy. I mean, Herrera has, you know, gotten into some physical altercations before that cost him his job as the coach of the Mexico national team. That was after he won the Gold Cup, remember, in the Philadelphia airport as they were leaving to head home to celebrate a tournament, getting in an altercation with a commentator. And while CONCACAF did issue a suspension, you know, as you said, he was able to kind of stay there and walkie-talkie down. Ultimately, it does seem to have cost him his job, that and the combination of results, you know, losing to LAFC and losing to Chivas in the Liga MX playoffs in Liguilla, means that America says, nah, no more Miguel Herrera. But they also mentioned in the statement today that they released, letting everyone know that they were firing him, essentially. They mentioned his behavior on the field. They said it wasn't up to what the institution, the club, a club as big and important as America, expects. So I do wonder if, you know, the result doesn't go a different way, but Herrera is escorted out or allows himself to be escorted out. If we're looking at an America that still employs Miguel Herrera, it's an interesting question. I don't know the answer, but sort of an interesting side note. I can't speak obviously to what went down in Orlando or why should have. I mean, he shouldn't be there. And he certainly shouldn't acquire a walkie-talkie, right? But
I mean, that's a competitive. That's a competitive edge. If we're talking about competitive edge, and the other thing is, okay, so the next coach that gets sent off, he's going to walk up in the stands and go, hey, somebody get me a walkie-talkie because Miguel Herrera was allowed to do it. Why can't I? I mean, the precedent and the message it sends, it just sends that we are not strong and we're not sticking to our policies and rules as a confederation when it comes to the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, that's the thing I think that confuses people.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think, Herrera not leaving, I think, was pretty bizarre because at first it kind of seemed like confusion. Okay, the stadium's empty. It may be, maybe I can sit here in row three and nothing happened. And then it's like, okay, no, they asked him to leave and he kind of ducked into a suite. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe that's allowed. We have seen suspended, even in the Gold Cup, like when a manager is suspended, they're allowed to be in the suite. But then you're talking about an NFL stadium where, there's 60,000 screaming fans and no way to get a message down. We're not given a walkie-talkie. So I don't know how that came about. Hopefully someone will write one day the great history behind how Miguel Herrera acquired a walkie-talkie. Did he have a backup plan? Did he know that could happen? Did he slip it into the suite before the game? I don't think we'll ever know. But it would be a great story if we can get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, no question about it. You do great coverage, John. I thank you so much for coming on. Let's get you on again real soon. Maybe to follow up on this final after we watch it tomorrow. John Arnold, just remind everybody where you are, John, and where they can find you. I gave them your Twitter handle, @Arnold, John, J-O-N. What else, where else can they find you?
Yeah, I've got a newsletter in the CONCACAF region called Get CONCACAF. You can Google Get CONCACAF with my name. And I always say, if you get the joke, the newsletter's for you. So hopefully people will enjoy learning more about our region and kind of chopping it up a little bit. Looking forward to the final. Thanks for having me on, Glenn. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Hey, by the way, I get it right into my email. So that's a beautiful thing. I can just click on it and read your article. It comes to me. So thank you for that. It's @Arnold, John. He does a great job of covering the CONCACAF Champions League and the CONCACAF region. And we will be watching Tigres and LAFC tomorrow. It is a big moment for Major League Soccer. Also some pressure on Tuca Ferretti and Tigres as well to get to Qatar and the Club World Cup. John, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That's John Arnold. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Our presenting sponsors, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They'll work for you 24-7 nights and weeks. 512-865-6710. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. By the way, Johnny Winter, one of the great bluesmen out of Texas, the Beaumont Port Arthur area. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got Juan Agudelo of Inter Miami. Some interesting thoughts from the Inter Miami striker coming up next on Soccer Matters, here presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Final segment of the show before Christmas this Friday on the Horn in Austin, Texas. Always brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. John and his firm have been getting soccer on the radio for years. We've done over a year now in Austin and very, very excited to be a part of the Austin sports landscape here on the Horn. Down in Miami, Inter Miami signed a 15-year-old winger named Felipe Valenzuela. He's a homegrown player now. Youngest to join Inter Miami's roster ever, obviously, and the youngest goal scorer in USL history. He scored in a 3-2 win over North Texas SC. So things are happening down in Miami, but we have to look at Miami because they were an expansion team and certainly had challenges with COVID and a number of other things, stadium issues, and just kind of compare it to what's going on here in Austin. To get a little bit of the flavor with Inter Miami in their first year, he is the Colombian-born striker, Juan Agudelo, and Juan joins us now. But we're glad to have you on this show.
Yeah, hey, Glenn, how you doing?
I'm happy to be here. So we got New Jersey ties. Toms River, New Jersey, down by the ocean growing up. What was that like, and what was your first soccer experience?
Oh, yeah, it was special. I mean, I came over from Colombia when I was 8 years old. Straight into Toms River, played every single kind of sport in that area, pretty accessible town to try, even ice hockey, all these things, baseball. and then started playing with a local team there, and then just basically took off from there.
Juan Agudelo, Inter Miami, joining us right now. Technically a free agent, doesn't mean he can't be re-signed by Inter Miami. He has played for the U.S. as well. Well, out of those other sports when you were in New Jersey, did any other ones outside of soccer appeal to you?
I really like basketball. I think I could have continued playing basketball. I was pretty good in my middle school. My high school coach was excited for me to go into ninth grade, but I decided to stick with soccer, and I went to St. Benedict's Prep in Newark just for soccer.
Yeah, big reputation there. So many national team players have come out of there, just like Juan, St. Benedict's. 17 years old, you become a professional soccer player. Doesn't seem like it was that far or long ago, Juan. Can you kind of go back to that time period and what that was like? Because that's an awful lot for a 17-year-old to take on.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Just happening so quick, I got invited to train with the first team through the Red Bulls Academy, one practice, and hearing a week later that they were interested in signing me as a second homegrown ever for the MLS. So that was pretty exciting. I think the under 17 World Cup helped me out with that contract, but yeah, still to be a professional athlete at 17, it was awesome. And it was tough for my mom to convince her to get me to sign.
How did you do that? Was that you? Or, well, I'm sure the Red Bulls had something to do with it too.
Oh, no. I just had to, she was very into, you know, my studies. Mm-hmm. And I just had to tell her, like, Mom, I don't see anything else. I don't see me doing anything else in my life. Like, this is my purpose. If I want to make it over to Europe and big, nobody starts so late. I need to start now. So that was it.
Juan Agudelo joining us, Inter Miami. So you did get over to Europe. You signed with Stoke. You had the work permit issues there. You get loaned out to Utrecht in the Netherlands. Just tell me about the whole European experience, because that was tough when you had the opportunity to play at Stoke and then get moved on loan.
Yeah, so going over to Europe, pretty special thing. Obviously, work permit issues, very tough for foreign players without European passports to get accepted into labor there. So I had to go on loan, and pretty special stepping on the field, watching games in Europe ever since I was little, and stepping on the field and playing professionally, came on as a sub, and it was just a whole different feeling. The fans, I felt like, understood a little bit more of the game. They were clapping towards different things that you could tell it was more advanced. And tactically, the players were also more advanced. Not too many errant passes and error crosses. So it was pretty exciting for me. But again, at the same time, it was pretty shocking experience for me, as in culture. So the culture was a bit shocking to me.
Why was the culture so difficult to adapt to, you think?
I think it was just, for me, the language, the food. I'm a very outgoing guy, and you know, when we have, you know, team dinners with the players and you know, you want to be a part of it, but you can't because you don't know the language. So yeah, it's like tough to make friends, tough to do things like that. But again, the food, and I really liked here in the States where there was things to do after practice, and it wasn't always about soccer. So that was what was tough for me in Europe. It felt like it was just strictly soccer, and it got 10 times worse whenever an injury happened.
Yeah, it becomes a lonely place, right?
Yeah, for sure.
How about other interests? Because you just set me up perfectly to ask you, what are some of your other interests that you balance with, obviously, a full-time career as a high-level athlete?
Well, now that, you know, I'm a father of two, I love teaching my kids new things. Like, recently, I'm playing tennis with them. Pretty good sport for girls to get into, and I like it also. So, playing tennis with them, working out, other things. Used to play video games, but now I'm, like, more grown now, and now I'm really into, like, stocks and investing and things like that, yeah.
How old are your two daughters, Juan?
I have a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old.
Oh, nice. Got them spread out nice here. That's good. Juan Agudelo joining us. Inter Miami played at, was signed by Stoke City, then went to Utrecht in the Netherlands as we continue talking here. So Inter Miami this year, I mean, you've been on a number of Major League Soccer teams, New England, the Red Bulls, Chivas USA. I mean, I remember calling tons of your games and seeing you score some great goals. What was the whole Inter Miami experience this year like? You know, I know it was a bit of a letdown not having fans as an expansion team because it was probably going to be so exciting. But just talk a little bit about the experiences because it wasn't the easiest, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't the easiest, as other expansion teams know and players that have experienced that. It's tough to go into a team and not know too many players, not have a relationship at all from the previous year. So it was, at a sense, it was pretty good to have everyone start from scratch, but you do need to have those kind of previous connections to feel comfortable and to connect on the field. They did everything right. The organization and the staff, I mean, they built a beautiful stadium. They got us accommodated very well, very smoothly. We were living great. Seemed everything seemed organized and the way that it should be. And then the season started kicking off. And the whole COVID experience took a lot of enthusiasm out of the whole Inter Miami situation, because the stadium was even rushed to get ready for this first home game that was supposed to be one of the most watched games in MLS history. I believe it was against the Galaxy. And then 2 days before that, we got to walk off the field and the league is suspended for a certain time. So that kind of blew a lot of a wind off the sails at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, did that affect, and I know this is a tough question, but did that affect maybe desire and training from players? I mean, can that affect you mentally and emotionally, you know, not having the fans there and, you know, getting ready for this big buildup and then all of a sudden it can't happen?
Yeah, for sure. Afterwards, we were doing individual training, Zoom strength workout sessions, and it was tough mentally because you're doing all this, but you don't know when you're going to start your first game. I think everyone started getting a little bit more enthusiastic about it whenever we found out about the Orlando tournament.
Talking to Juan Agudelo, Inter Miami, had a good time in New England, scored close to 30 goals for the Revolution in 142 games. He's joining us here, has ties to Houston, and it's a great interview here. I appreciate Juan coming on the program. Diego Alonso, now that's a manager I admired watching in Liga MX with Rayados. What type of manager was he, and how did he adapt to the situation?
Yeah, I think it was pretty tricky situation. As you probably know, we hired a manager pretty late into our preseason, and things were kind of like we were driving the car without too much organization and too much. Like we had just basically three wheels on the car. We just needed one more wheel. He was trying to get accommodated. I mean, for the first week, it was tough for him to remember, you know, the players' names and things like that. So that was the first impression. But later on, you could just tell he was a very positive coach with regards to winning games and winning championships. He's got a couple championships under his belt. So once we knew that, we went on a board and listened to him. He had some very unorthodox ideas and ways of training and ways of playing. But yeah, it was something we had to accommodate to. I mean, most of us players that were there were used to, you know, MLS style coaches. He came from a Mexican league, which also does things differently. Sometimes plays three in the back and things like that, and also South American. So we were all just trying to understand and learn off of that. And yeah.
What would be another one of the unorthodox things? Because you mentioned playing three at the back. That was really kind of like, whoa, okay, that's different.
Yeah. I would say our be another thing. An unorthodox thing.
Or even training methods, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we sometimes, I mean, they do that in Europe, but sometimes we, in a home game, we were talking about staying in a hotel the day before a game. In training, we would do a lot of running. It was a team where no matter what we do, we were going to high press. And we really, you know, we're trying to figure that out. And it was different. We had some rules in place, very kind of strict style. And yeah.
So he was having to adapt to Major League Soccer and the differing ways of the athletes and everything else. We're talking to Juan Agudelo. Juan, take me back to your first ever national team goal. Take us through it.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell me you forgot that.
No, you never forget that. That's set up my whole life. So I got a call, got an email from Bob Bradley saying he would like me to come into South Africa game with the full national team. And that was pretty shocking just to be called there. I was like, okay, I'm going there and I'm not going to play. I'm just going to be there, maybe train with the team, but I'm definitely not going to get minutes in my mind. And then game time comes, I'm on the bench and I'm thinking again, okay, I'm on the bench. I made it to the 18-man roster, but I'm not going to play, right? Then I'm told to warm up and I'm thinking, okay, I'm warming up, looks cool, but obviously I'm not going to go in the game. And then I hear my number being called out and I'm going into the game. The game's 0-0 and these are the kind of games you want to go into as a forward. So I go into the game and I pick up the ball, play a through ball. Makes this group, plays the ball back to me, and I score. And blacked out after that, pretty much. And then after the game, couldn't even tell you how the next 5 minutes during the game, but then started to settle down. And then after the game, I was told I was the youngest player to ever score for the U.S. national team.
That was November 17th, 2010. I just took a look at it here while you were describing it to remind myself, because I remember watching it on TV and powering into the box. And it's a fantastic goal. And, it was this moment where and it was the outside of your right foot, right?
Yeah, outside of my right foot, off the crossbar and in.
Yeah, it had a lot of wow factor to it because it hit the underside of the crossbar too, with the outside of your right foot though. Juan, I just want to thank you very much for coming on tonight. Enjoyed the discussion with you. I want to wish you the best of luck. We'll, you know, whether it's back with Inter Miami or another team in Major League Soccer, you know, being on this show tonight, there's going to be rumors to Juan Agudelo coming to the Houston Dynamo. You do know that, right?
Yes, I'm well aware. Well aware.
Well, thank you for ginning it up down here in Houston. I've enjoyed watching your career. Keep it up. Keep. I'm sure we'll see one of your daughters on the tennis circuit too one day.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right, Glenn. Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
I really enjoyed the conversation. We'll do it again. We can go another segment one day in the future. Thanks for coming on the program.
Sure, no problem.
So that does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on the Horn. A big thank you, as always, to Sam Pica in Austin producing, and Victor Ariza back in Houston. Also our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. A big thank you to Juan Agudelo as well for joining us on the show. So happy holidays to everyone. Until next week, remember, you get the podcast of this at hornfm.com. You can follow me and hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook Soccer Matters, or over at Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. Have great holidays, and until next Monday, I'm Glenn Davis. Thanks for tuning in tonight.